We're right here for every catch-up between classes, for every personal best, for every ambition. Here at Canterbury Christchurch University, you're part of a vibrant community that celebrates every small win and every big moment. That's what makes us fifth in the UK for student experience, based on the Sunday Times Good University Guide 2026. Discover the degree for you at canterbury.ac.uk. Canterbury Christchurch University. We're right here with you.
Today's guest, Phyllis Coletta, founder of How to Be a Good Dog, author of the book How to Be a Good Dog, returns to teach us one of her most powerful cues, heal. Now, we're not talking about animals or dogs. We're talking about our puppy minds. So it's all about learning how to call yourself back when you drift into overthinking, self-judgment, or emotional spirals. We'll talk about compassionate recall, how to return to presence without shame, and how simple language shifts can change the way we relate to ourselves. So let's practice coming home. Just a quick shout out to Dr. Bradley Nelson and iHeartRadio, and to our listeners and our audience and our fans. Please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. It's great to see you again. I think this is episode 5, and we went through a whole bunch of cues to train our puppy minds. And today we're talking about healing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are. And thanks. I love talking to you and Stacy. You guys are so cued into this. It's really lovely to have these conversations. But, you know, it is a little bit about dogs, because healing with an E, that process of teaching your dog to be calm and walk beside you, does promote healing, H-E-A-L, in humans. So, like, I'd like you to, you know, everybody can picture, right, that human who's got a big out of control dog on a leash, and the dog is dragging them all over the place, right?
Right.
Because they don't know how to heal. I think the analogy is very clear to me. Like, that's what our emotions do to us. They drag us around like an out of control dog, right?
Uh-huh.
And you see a frantic look on people's faces, and, you know, the dog just wants to move. This is what emotions can do to us. So the whole process of healing with an A through meditation is about emotional regulation. We were just talking about this. Like, it's nice to learn to be calm and to breathe and to be able to bring yourself to center during the day. But really, the real big work, great work, is that you can actually get some peace of mind that is sustainable and peace of heart. And to do that, we have to be able to see our emotions, which are triggered by our thoughts, and address them, figure it out, you know? So healing like a dog is what we're, the goal is to have our emotions under control, and not in a repressive way, but in a healthy way, you know, because big emotions arise quickly. You know, a dog can grab you and pull you really fast. Same thing with a thought, right? A thought that provokes a response in the body, that provokes anger, that can happen in a nanosecond. That's how it happens, you know, really fast. So we're just trying to embed a practice that starts with sitting in silence. And when we get up and start living our lives in the world, it continues to help us regulate, because we've learned how to understand what's going on up there and leave the thoughts that are hurting us, and make some room for that alpha dog, the wise old Phyllis in there that knows that everything is okay. So,
yeah.
And, you know, dogs have an advantage, frankly, Lisa, because they don't think, like, not much. They don't think, you know, so.
Animals literally live in the moment. It's absolutely fascinating.
That's why we love them. Yeah, we love them because of that. And, you know, they use instinct. They don't use cognition. We are the only species on the planet that can self-reflect. Animals can't. Animals, birds, you know, they don't self-reflect and say, like, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have done that. I'll do better next time or whatever. But in a way, it's kind of nice. Dogs don't think. That's why we love them. I remember looking into the eyes of my black lab thinking, oh, my God, there's just nothing going on in there, is there? Right. And it's lovely. It really is, you know. So, and I used to think that healing for a human meant, like, you process something and it's done. Right. Like a checklist. Okay, childhood, boop, you know, divorce, dirt, like checking the list of the hurt and the pain and the stuff. But, and I'd like to hear what you think about this. In my experience, that's not the case. You just transform it. You get it to walk beside you rather than drag you around, but it's still there. You've just kind of made peace with it, but it doesn't go away. Like stuff
Yeah.
that we've experienced, right? Doesn't go away. So, what's your reflection on that?
It doesn't go away because I've been working on stuff for a decade of my life in certain aspects, and it's still there, but now I have the ability to view it from an outsider's perspective. It's almost like watching it and having the know that, this was part of my life, but seeing it in a different light as more of like a learning experience, being grateful for it because it brought me to where I am today. It's all about turning the experience and the challenge around so that it's not controlling your life, controlling your emotions. He who angers you controls you. Any emotion that controls you is going to control you. So it's about figuring out how to let go. And it just becomes easier and easier and easier. Yeah, I don't think it'll ever go away unless you get amnesia and hit your head or something and lose all your memory, but I don't think it ever goes away.
And n nobody really told me that. I wasn't prepared for that. I don't know where I got this notion. It's just like, check it off the list. Maybe it was my lawyer mind. I fix this, boom, we're finished. But the real progress for me is made and was made when I face the really scary shit. And it doesn't have to be, I do want to say something I think is really importantly said, and that is if anybody has really severe trauma, like something trauma, the word, I think we overuse it a little bit, we call everything trauma when really it's something outside the normal experience that evokes a fear of death, essentially. So we're talking like assaults and severe illnesses and car crashes, like that's the trauma with a capital T, But if you have severe depression or uncontrolled anxiety, like meditation, you should work with somebody. Honestly, it's not something I would want somebody in a really difficult state to give a try to without some kind of guidance, because it's going to make you feel like a failure, perhaps, like, oh, I can't do this, or it's going to agitate you more. So just like, and I don't think that's the case for lots of people, but I just want folks who have really endured substantial trauma to know that obviously the best case scenario is to work with a therapist, a counselor. If you, and a lot of folks don't have access to mental health right now at all, you have a good friend, somebody, a hotline. Like you shouldn't necessarily just jump into sitting in silence if you have a real, mental illness that needs or trauma-based responses that need extra help. But that being said, most of us are just like, I mean, the daily life gives us enough to, it's about the things that happen every single day. In Hamlet, Shakespeare calls it the heartache and the thousand natural shocks the flesh is heir to. Like boom, boom, boom. You go to work, boom, you're getting beat up. Like there's just that kind of goes on all day. You listen to the news. So we're talking about, yeah, the deep stuff in ourselves, the betrayals, the divorce, the deaths, we did, that kind of stuff. But we sometimes can use help with that, in meditation if we have some severe stuff going on. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, and I think I want to also mention that even though it gets easier, our like dealing with our emotions and memories and traumas, I have had instances where I have a day where something comes up and I'm like, oh my God, like I'll start crying and sobbing because of a certain memory, and I'm like, I swear I dealt with that like 5 years ago. Like I spent a whole year dealing with that. And then all of a sudden something will trigger it. So I think it's important to note that as you dig through the layers and remove layer and layer and layer, you're gonna expose more and more and more. And the healing never ends. Like it never ends. I know a meditator who's been meditating for 30 years and he's still going through those ups and downs. It's just a bit easier because we talked about, you learn how to view your emotions as like clouds in the sky that are just passing by, but it's tricky.
Yeah, it is really tricky, but there's this guy, I just love him. His name is Sadhguru or something like that. He's got one, YouTube and stuff, but he says when something happens to you, you essentially have a choice. You can become wounded or wise, right? So we learn from our wounds. Like wisdom comes from these. I don't like this, Lisa, this situation where suffering happens. I don't like it. If I was queen of the world, it wouldn't be this way, right? But this is the way it is. And so when we suffer and something happens, we can be a victim or we can just grow in our wisdom. That's, you do have a choice. Like, unlike the dog, like a traumatized dog can hurt you, but they don't want to. They don't know better. We can know better and we can do better and we can regulate our emotions. I'm telling you, that to me is the key to everything. If you can not have the huge triggers, emotions, that kind of stuff. You know, it's interesting because when people say, oh, she triggered me or he triggered me, it's not that person's fault. You have a trigger. You have a problem. If I get triggered, it's my problem to deal with. That other person has no control over what he or she says or does. I don't say that. Nobody triggers me. I have a trigger that needs work. That's all. It's more information. So when you feel triggered, you know, by that situation, say you go straight to, okay, it's still here. What do I need to do? You know, and what we need to do is just be like, oh, you again. You know what I mean? Like I told a story weeks ago about like this. You know, I love this story about this monk that went up into the middle of nowhere, and the demons followed, and he couldn't get rid of them until he just like, oh, whatever, come on in, sit down, let's talk. You know, and they dissipate. They do lose their power. That's the good news. You're right. It doesn't really end. It's a process, but they do lose their power, which is wonderful. You don't want those events and feelings and scars to prevent you from living your fullest life. So you need to make space, you know, make space for them.
I think it's also important to note that there's a lot of outside factors too. What you're putting in your body, the quality of sleep that you're getting, everything. Because I know if I have a really terrible sleep, if I am on a holiday and I'm eating really crappy for a while, that's gonna test my it my body changes, and I'm just not able to sit in stillness for as long, and I don't feel as good, so I'm not able to handle the emotions as well, and I'm easily irritable. So what is your advice to people who live high stress lives? Because there's a lot of people who don't sit still until 9 o'clock at night, and by the time they sit still, they're so exhausted that they're just brain dead. They don't even know what's going on. I mean, that used to be my life. I used to get up at 7 in the morning and I used to go to work, and I would come home and me and my partner would do things, and we would sit down and eat dinner at 9 o'clock at night on the couch and rinse repeat until the universe said, nah, you're not doing that anymore. And then I got really sick. But what is your advice to people who live that hustle lifestyle? Because a lot of people have kids and families and no time.
You know, my advice would be take yourself off autopilot. You're on autopilot. You're not even living your life. Life is living you. You're not living your life. You don't even know what you feel half the time. And in recovery, they call it halt. You know, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Those circumstances that will trigger you. And that's what essentially, keep going back to the 12 steps. Even though I was in Al-Anon and it was wonderful, but it teaches you to be aware of what you're thinking, what you're doing. The 12 steps are fabulous, but you know, if you're just waking up, getting on your phone, getting out of bed, getting breakfast. You know, if you're running through your life on autopilot, you're missing it. And this is not a dress rehearsal, man. We don't know how many of these lives we have, right? This might be it. So I would say becoming consciously aware of the moment, even if the moment is, oh, I'm so hungry, I'm hangry. You know, you have to pay attention to yourself. Otherwise, you know, you'll just get battered around all day long. You know, the Buddhists have these things called the eight worldly winds. I love this. It's a list of emotions that we go, you know, or things that happen that involve like pleasure, pain, loss, gain, fame, shame, praise, blame, like all this stuff all day coming in and out. And we're like a boat on a really rough ocean just getting battered around by those things. But once, honestly, you get into the habit like you did. Unfortunately, you had to get sick. I've been sick too. I have, because of the stress in my life that I was not paying attention to. I swear, I had breast cancer in 2013, and it was right at the end of a very long, difficult marriage of 10 years where I suffered. And then, he filed for divorce in December. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in January. So and that's anecdotally, that happens a lot because I was sleepwalking through it as well. So, meditation over time allows us to understand why we act the way we act. And we act like behavior is the last thing. The first thing is the thought, and then comes the feeling, and it's in the body, and then comes the behavior. So that's kind of the process. So if you wrangle those thoughts, the mind is the most important part of that equation. But if your mind is on autopilot, that dog is going to drag you around all day. You're going to fall and scrape yourself on the sidewalk. That dog is dragging you everywhere. The point of healing is the process of us bringing all of it, all the pain and everything under control to walk beside us so that when it arises out of nowhere, some memory or whatever, we're like, oh, it's you again. But you know what? You're not going to do that to me. It's not going to happen today. Take a breath, go outside. The things we've talked about in terms of leave it, to stop the constant, because if you're not even aware of what you're thinking, nothing's going to change. But sitting in silence, right? That'll get you. You were saying, initially before the show about how people can't even sit, let alone sit in silence,
I know a lot of people who are super anxious, and just you can tell that they have a lot of trauma that they haven't faced, and they just keep themselves busy all day long. All day long. The people in my life who have anxiety and who deal with a lot of depression, they're always doing something. And so it breaks my heart, because it's like, you can't sit still, because when you sit still, that's when all the things start coming up and it's too much for you to handle. And I have people in my life who use alcohol still, and they're like in their 50s, and they use it on the weekends, and it just shows me that they just can't look at their emotions.
Right, it's scared. It's scary, but gosh, it's a warrior kind of an act to do. I mean, if you like we've talked about, you got to get really sick of yourself, and I guess your friends haven't yet imploded enough, sadly. I mean, eventually it's going to get you, but unless you feel it, you got to feel it to heal it. You got to name it to tame it. If you don't know what's pushing your buttons, they're your buttons, and you don't know what's pushing them. Then you're just going to get batted around all day. But if you can sit in silence, yeah, the busyness is so frustrating. It's like, people with their color-coded binders and their lists and, making work to do rather than to sit still. It's a real act of courage to meditate.
Definitely. I've been noticing that more and more. And I don't know if you agree with this, but I tend to think that people who've been through a lot of trauma are the ones who become able to sit still. And the people who maybe they just had a little bit of an easier life, like, I find that those people are the ones that aren't able to sit still. Do you see that correlation?
100%. And that goes back to this idea that suffering is the portal to peace. And I wish it wasn't. But and so everybody suffers, some more than others. I mean, there is a magnitude of suffering, right? You've been through a lot of hard stuff. I've been through some difficult stuff, not as much as others, et cetera. We all get something. But if you've lived a very cushy life and you've had everything you need in terms of material stuff and whatever, at some point you're going to be lost at sea because you've never even looked at your pain and suffering. But I don't know why it seems to be that the hard stuff, if we choose the path of wisdom rather than wounded, can really just set you on a path to not happiness, because happiness comes and goes, but contentment and peace of mind. And and I was going to tell you the story of my mom. The way she died was like her biggest lesson. Talk about suffering, right? So She was a feisty woman, like a nurse, you know, first generation Italian, like really a rough, tough lady, but she loved us, right? So when she was about 66, she started acting really strangely. Couldn't remember stuff, couldn't find things, couldn't finish her sentences. And we were like, what the heck? So battery of tests, and we found out she had something called Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease, which is mad cow. It's the human variant of this
Oh, wow.
disease from the 70s or 80s or 90s that used to be called mad cow disease. And it's a brain wasting disease. And it was literally her worst nightmare. When she was like in her 40s, she started saying every day, like, I'm afraid of being in a nursing home. Don't put me in a nursing home. What if I lose my mind? Like, she was obsessed with getting older and dying in a certain way. And to me, I mean, it was like the universe was like, oh, you want that with or without paralysis? Like some kind of waitress, you know, taking her order, because she never really looked at the fear. All she did was talk about it, but she never looked at it. And oh my gosh, she suffered. She was paralyzed and blind and vegetative, and she died a year and a half after the diagnosis. But it taught me, like, it was such a blessing that she left me with this, because she was in my house. I had her on hospice. I saw, you know, we all saw the whole thing, but I mean, I thought, I have to face my fears. What you just taught me, Mom, by dying the way you did, was that your fears will find you if you don't face them. Carl Jung used to say, what doesn't come to you in consciousness will come to you in fate. So, you
True.
know, you can suppress it all you want, all your fears, like my mom did, but it came into her body, and it gave her exactly everything that she was afraid of. So I was 38 when she died. I was young, and in my early 40s was when I started to meditate. Like, once I had gotten over the trauma of the whole process, because it was a really ugly disease to watch and be a part of, I thought, I gotta face my fears. I have to, or I'll
Yeah.
end up, you know, unconsciously creating them. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, well, we talked about this before, but it sometimes it takes those moments where the universe just wipes everything out from you and then you're forced to do it. And that's typically when people have these, moments of, I don't know if you want to call it comeback or what, but the universe will always put us back on our path. If we get distracted and if we get off our path, the universe will always do it, whether we like it or not, whether we like the way they do it or not, they're always going to bring us back. And like I can relate to what you went through. My whole body went numb on the right side and I wasn't able to do anything. And everything slowly got harder and harder and harder, and the noise got louder and louder and louder until I like lost my mind. And I said yes to healing. And it was interesting because I've always, like, for the past 12 years of my life, I've been meditating, and then I kind of got off that path, and I just lived for a while, but the universe wanted me back on that path. And so now I'm dealing with things that I guess I didn't deal with many, many years ago. And I found this journal that I wrote when I was a kid, and it talked about how I was terrified of the dark. And in all of this healing that I've recently done in stillness with meditation, and many other things, I healed my fear of being afraid of the dark, and I actually saw where it came from. So 41, that was 1996. So that was like, I was like 11 years old, 10 years old, and I was afraid of it then. So it's almost like it took that long to heal things, which is so interesting to me. Like these things come to us when when we're sitting still. There's no other way that we can get answers to these questions or heal ourselves. We have to sit still.
Yep, we really do. And it's terrifying. I get that. I was scared to meditate for two, like I've said this before, two main reasons. Number one, I was scared of the shit that was going to come up, and it
Yeah.
did. And that's why, again, that I am not a fan of guided meditation, because to me, it's just a way of avoiding the really hard work. I mean, once in a while, it's fine, I think. But really, if you really want meditation to transform you, you got to sit still and quiet. It is a hero's journey by yourself. It is a solo journey of getting to know your own mind. You got to figure
Yeah.
out your. And once you do that, like Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, says, to teach a dog to heal, you have to A, stop the excitement, right? Because they're out of control. There's some kind of up-level emotion going on, like what happens to
Right.
us. You have to see the trigger, what triggered that in me, and then you just correct, you correct yourself, you correct the course of your behavior. And if you actually work backwards, so you saw the excitement, which was in your mind, and you saw that you understood the trigger in the situation, like you know, the dog got triggered by XYZ, then you correct the behavior. And so you do that often enough, right? You stop the anxiety, the excitement, the agitation that you're feeling. But to do that, you have to be aware that you're even feeling it. You know, like I worked in an ER for 5 years as a tech, and of course there was a lot of trauma and pain. People are obviously in pain when they come into an ER often, and they didn't even know what hurt or where or how or what. I mean, people are so disconnected from their bodies, they didn't even know what was going on. I remember, you know, often they would say something like, "Oh, everything hurts, everything hurts." And I would say, "I get that. I feel you, but can you find one place on your body that doesn't hurt?" And that
Right.
would, they'd have to stop and think. And I remember one guy saying, "Okay, I guess my feet and my toes don't hurt." And I was like, just put your mind on that for a minute. Give yourself a rest from the pain, because his mind was building a story, you know,
Right.
and he hurt. I mean, he was in pain, but he was creating suffering. You know,
Yeah.
there's a difference. Pain is pain. We're gonna feel it, but your mind can make you suffer. And that's the way, you know, we have to learn these sort of ways to work with our body when we're in pain. But if you don't even know your body, know what hurts and what doesn't, you know, we got to get back to the basics of just being awake and aware of what's going on in our life, in our bodies.
So as we're healing, and these things are coming up, what do you suggest that people do to deal with whatever's coming up? Because that's the most challenging part of healing.
Right. It is. And again, if it's
Especially when
severe,
people are just starting.
what's that? Would you
That
say?
especially when people are just starting.
Right. When you're just starting, and again, if there's severe trauma, you know, sexual assault, sexual abuse, physical abuse, that kind of stuff, you may need some guidance from a counselor. It's really hard. You don't want to get sort of re-traumatized by yourself. However, most people, it's just, you know, it's adversity. It's not necessarily trauma, although we all have some of that. But, you know, it's just like, you know, your parents didn't do XYZ, you know, the things that we miss, the deprivations and stuff. You know, if you're in the process, you have to remember you have two minds. You have this yippy, untrained puppy, but we talk about the alpha mind. Last time we talked about the alpha dog. So an alpha dog is no longer considered this. The canine science doesn't say they're aggressive, or they are just they're collected, they're composed. They're a quiet, strong, silent presence in the pack, and the pack conforms to them because they respect their whatever, if you want to call it, dominance. But your alpha mind is that wisdom mind. It's quiet. It's just back there watching the shit show. It's not commentating on how terrible you are and blah, blah, blah. But if you have to make space for that voice, which is really no voice at all, it's quiet. And it's that part of you that knows that everything is going to be okay. And that's the truth. I mean, now that I'm almost 70, I can tell my kids and grandkids, yes, everything is going to be okay. It may take a really long time, but ultimately, it will be okay in one way or another. But that came from years of respecting the quiet, the alpha in my mind, you know, that part of me that just watches and I feel it's reliable, it's security, there's peace. Like we all carry that. But again, if we're not aware of it, of what we carry, it's very powerful. To have a quiet mind is probably the most powerful thing you can do for yourself. So you have to develop that over the course of sitting meditation, but you got to get through, cut through, let the noise in and learn to let it out. Just let all the crap in and just in and out, you know, like a leaf on a river. Stuff is, you got to let it go. Don't try to stop it. It's never going to stop. But I'll tell you what, the Chihuahua that used to drive me into unconscious behavior, she's gone. She's gone. And there's an old black lab in there now, just like sitting in the sun, not doing much anything, you know, waiting for the car keys, go for a walk, go for a ride. So it's possible, but it's a process that we need to commit to. And next week we'll talk about once you have quieted your mind and your puppy is trained, you get to bring that into the pack. Your family, your work, the world, your neighborhood, your community, and well-trained minds will transform the world. And the world is
Yeah.
in the jitter. It is. It's in. It's circ We're circling the drain right now, right? But people who are on a path of training their own minds, I swear that's the best thing we can do right now for the world, is to train our own minds so we're not adding to the garbage. We're not adding
Yeah.
to the frenzy. Because it's true, hurt people hurt people. If you're hurt and you're unhealed hurt, you're going to hurt other people. I've done it. I really feel ashamed and embarrassed when that happens, but most people don't even realize they're carrying around all this unresolved trauma and all these agitating emotions. They're hurting other people. So the best thing we can all do for the shit show that we're living in and the chaos perhaps of our families, our neighborhoods, our jobs, is to work inside our minds to get to know who we are and how we're making it worse or how we can make it better.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The people who perhaps haven't learned or have no desire to learn how to heal and sit still and meditate, I'm afraid that they're in for a rude awakening because the world is just getting tougher and tougher and tougher to live in. The frequency of the world is changing, the resonance of the world is changing. So it is the people that have the strong mindset and control of their minds that are going to help heal the world. Because it's
Yes.
just like when someone super calm walks into a room, it brings the whole entire room down, just like a dog. When a dog walks in a room and they're super calm, the entire room, you can almost hear the hush. It just like tones everything down. And
Isn't
that's
that
like
crazy?
the people in the world with the strong mindset. They walk in a room and they control that room and they inspire people to want what they have. And so it's like, tell me your secrets, you know? And the secret is learning how to sit with yourself and be okay with yourself. And
Yes.
it's funny because this morning I was in a walk in the forest. I get up in the morning and sometimes I go for walks and I saw a man with a dog and this dog was kind of, I was analyzing the dog and then I'd look at the human and I was like, because ever since we started talking about this, I'm becoming more and more conscious of the pet people's dogs are essentially a reflection of how that human is. And I was like, so this guy seems like he's pretty chill, actually, because his dog was acting really, really good. So I was like, he must have a great calm mindset. It was funny.
Well, yeah, and Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, shout out to that guy. I love him. What he talks about is energy. When he goes
Yeah.
to a family to try to train a crazy dog, like the things these folks let their dogs get away with, it's just crazy. But for whatever reason, for fear or, but he always talks about it's the human's energy that
Yeah.
is creating this. It's not the animal. The animal has instinct. And they're just responding to what we're bringing to the table. Horses are very tuned to our emotions, right? So, horses will sense. They sense fear and it makes them afraid. And but that, like the alpha kind of mind, as you approach a horse, they're going to love you and do whatever needs to be done. So it just makes life better on every and on every way. And like I really believe, Lisa, yes, the world's crazy, but I think there's a lot of people who are trying to be good dogs, honestly. And like there's 8 billion people on the planet. What if like a quarter of them just really committed to training their minds so they didn't bring more chaos to a really chaotic world? Because right now our leaders, red, blue, whatever you believe in, they are out of nobody. There's no leadership. There's no alpha dog anywhere that can, nobody's gonna save us. We have to save ourselves. And you start right inside your head. And what I have done, like say in the climate, I have stopped social media altogether because I couldn't handle the garbage in. And what you let into your head, your eyes, your ears, everything. Of course, the food you take into your body, it all matters. So, start kind of looking around at your life and the agitating factors that you're allowed. Is the TV on all day? Are you always having music on? Like start evaluating your environment for what you've created, and whether it's calm or whether it's chaos.
I truly believe the world is changing and more people are wanting to be good dogs, as you said. More and more people are going to health retreats instead of Mexico for a week to get drunk. Like, there's all these retreats popping up all over the world where people can go and sit still and process and heal. And more people are being called to that. So I think we're going to see a huge shift in the world over the next decade. And more people are going to be sitting still. And I also want to say that every little decision we make today will move the needle a little bit. So if you decide to, change your eating habit today, just a little bit by a little bit, maybe you drink more water today, maybe you choose one thing to do better, it's going to help you tomorrow. And then it's going to make you want to do more of that as the days go on. And suddenly you're going to build a really, really healthy routine. So it all starts with maybe 1 minute of stillness. Like, that's how it starts. It doesn't have to be dramatic. It literally starts with doing it for 1 minute. And then that bleeds into the next thing and the next thing. Because once you start feeling that peace, you're going to be addicted to it and you're going to want more and more and more and more and more and more. And then you're going to be just resilient and this gladiator, this warrior of bring it on type of attitude.
Oh, that's wonderful, man. You really feel passionate about this. And I just want to say, lots of people can't afford retreats. Like that kind of stuff, it's wonderful. It gets you out and away from your daily life, but that's thousands and thousands of dollars. And lots of us can't afford that. So meditation is like your own retreat every day. It's like a little 2 minute retreat in the morning, maybe 5 minutes at night. And the whole point, even if you do go on a wellness retreat, which is wonderful if you can, the point is to bring it home and do it.
Yeah.
You know, have a great week where you feel so wonderful, and then you step on the plane and you're screaming at people, you know. So the concept, and but if you can't afford that, then just it your life can be a retreat. Everything you
Yeah.
do can be part of that process of always looking at yourself and trying to make sure that you're not harming yourself through intaking things, you know, that are toxic on any level.
Yeah. So where can people find your book?
They can find it on howtobeagooddog.com. The website's a great place to start. I mean, you can find it on Amazon and, Borders, and but the best place to start is right on the website. You just click a button and it'll get, go straight to the publisher, and you can order one, and or a Kindle, the ebook as well. And it's really short because I do, it's 200 pages. I recognize people don't have a lot of time to read, but it's also very funny, which helps people learn, I think. You know, when you read other people's screw ups, it really makes you kind of feel good, you know. So help yourself.
Yeah, I agree. When you can relate to someone's challenging times, that's the best feeling in the world. It makes you feel like you're part of something. You're not alone. It's not just you. There's nothing worse than feeling like, oh my God, I'm the only person going through this. 'Cause that is so not true. It's crazy how our minds tell us that. Like, it's absolutely insane how we tend to think that we're the only ones who could be possibly going through this. Like, that is such bullshit. It's not even funny.
That's the ego, as we call it, the ego, that part of us, that scared human part that wants to be in control of everything all the time. And God forbid you should actually, have solidarity. And it's also social media, which is continuing to sow the seeds of discord and discontent and hatred and separation and separation and separate. We are all flesh and blood, brothers and sisters, and we all think and feel very much alike. But, if you look at the culture, it's all about individuals. We are not individuals. We are part of nature. We are a communal plant. And we tend to, an aspen grove. I lived in Colorado for a decade, and the aspen groves are beautiful. You see hundreds of trees, but there's one root. So underground, they're all connected. And that's the way I feel we are. We look like we're all separate, like trees in an aspen grove, but we are all fed by one root. And that's a beautiful, it's a beautiful thing to think of, right? And that root is, of course, love and life and regenerative, wholesome ways to stay alive and grow. We all have that available to us. So you're not alone.
Thank you so much for being here today and for talking about this very important topic.
Yeah, it was fun as always, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in. Please do not forget to like and subscribe and check out howtobeagooddog.com to learn how to train your puppy mind. Until next time, take care, everybody.